top of the morning. This is We Ourselves. I'm Matt Burrows, Eileen Senior. Before I do anything else, let me thank all of our listeners who made our drive so successful. And I especially want to thank the new members who came on to make certain that they were part of the WPFW family. It was a good, strong drive, and I appreciate it. Especially want to say to all my renewing members and to the new ones, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is still the only voice for the people, and it's very important. Now, this morning we're going to have as a special guest on the phone Dr. Judy Wood, who's a former professor of mechanical engineering, who stunned the world when she told the world that the World Trade Center complex didn't come down because of the planes. Came down because of other things. And she's posted a new study that considers what is called the field effects associated with hurricanes and energy effects involved in destruction of those towers on 9/11. Her extensive research has already cataloged a substantial range of evidence of very unusual effects at the World Trade Center site on and since 9/11. Dr. Wood, welcome again to We Ourselves.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you have with you John Hutchison?
Yes.
Tell our listeners who John Hutchison is.
Shall we introduce him?
Of course.
Well, John, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, Ambrose?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning from Vancouver, British Columbia, to Washington, D.C., and especially to you, sir.
How are
you
doing? Right. Just tell our listeners who you are and what you're doing with Dr. Judy Wood.
Well, I guess that would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
John Kenneth Hutchison, and I work in anti-gravitational research and also directed energy stuff, too, so.
Uh-huh.
And she's correlated some information that's with metals and that, with the World Trade Center and some of my work.
Okay. Now let's go back to Dr. Wood. Tell our listeners about this new study, Dr. Wood.
Hello.
Tell our listeners about your new study.
New study is Hurricane Erin. Hurricane Erin was predicted to be larger than Hurricane Katrina and was headed towards New York City on the morning of 9/11. It was right outside of New York City, and who knew about it?
That's a good question.
I don't remember hearing about a hurricane, a huge hurricane, like 500 miles in diameter.
Yeah, my goodness.
And got to looking at it more and started realizing that with hurricanes or tornadoes, some interesting things happen. We get levitation. We get destruction of things. We get one material going through another material. So I started thinking about it more and looking into it, because why would we have not been told about a hurricane right outside of New York City? Now, Cape Cod was getting rained on from the outer bands of the hurricane. And Cape Cod isn't too far away from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that was north of the hurricane. The hurricane was the closest to New York City on 9/11. It headed straight to New York, and then right after 9/11, it headed back out. Pretty amazing. And I think we all know when a storm is approaching, we feel it. You can feel that there's a tornado about to happen, or that's a tornado cloud. We feel the field effects from it and the impending storm. We also have a different feeling after the storm leaves. So I got to looking into that more and more. Perhaps folks would like to look at the article on my website. That's at drjudywood.com. I put it below the other one, so you see a row of pictures below a pink bar. And it's entitled Hurricane 9/11 Weather Anomalies and Field Effects. And I started looking again at various anomalies with hurricanes and seeing the similarities with what we found on 9/11. I know that what John does is interfere different types of beams, different types of energy, and maybe the hurricane is one type and all you need to do is add another type. So but I do know that we feel it, and animals feel the weather coming because they run for the hills or run for their cave. So we had various odd things happening. Like, I've got an image from Hurricane Andrew where there's a big piece of plywood that just goes right through a tree. And I think we've all heard about straw going through trees.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, an explanation that, well, the tree's bent over and the straw goes into the crack. But it's a little bit, you know, too often. Well, in John Hutchison's work, he has one material, you know, just very dissimilar materials kind of blending into it or fusing into another material. Like, one becomes very soft, like gelification, and, well, the other material goes into it, and then it resolidifies when the field is turned off. Strange things. And I think we all have seen pictures of cars sitting in trees or something like that, or sitting on a fence. I've got a picture of a car sitting on a fence. Car doesn't have a scratch on it. It's balanced on the fence, and the fence doesn't even look damaged. How did that car get there? It had to have been set down gently. And then looking at it further, you see the structure of the storm. Looks like a big Tesla coil. Hurricanes look like this. You know, there's the eye. And also tornadoes look like this. And when we have a tornado, there's a lightning that goes from the upper part down to the ground. So we know there's a potential between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest discovery I made here is looking at the magnetometer data. That's the Earth's magnetic signal. They record it up in Alaska at several different recording stations. And what I found is that at each of the events, when the North Tower got its hole in it, they told us an airplane made that hole, but what we do know is it got a hole in it, and the South Tower then got a hole in it. Then the South Tower went away, and the North Tower went away, and then several hours later, Building 7 went away. You can see a blip on the chart at each one of those events in the magnetometer reading. So why would the Earth's magnetic signal change abruptly at the exact same time as each one of those events?
Go ahead.
And I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg. That's mm-hmm. what I call this argument. Mm-hmm. Did something cause both to happen? Did one cause the other to happen? I don't believe the Earth's magnetic signal changes when you have a car wreck or if you even had an airplane run into the ground or into a building. I don't think that's going to affect the magnetic signal around the globe. But what's interesting is the hole in the North Tower appeared at about 8:46, and about 9 o'clock, the hole in the South Tower appeared. When the hole in the North Tower appeared, the curve takes an abrupt dip down, and when the other hole appeared, it takes an abrupt dip back up. It's like it reverses. And the same thing when the towers, as I say, go poof. When the South Tower went poof, the curve took a big dive down. They kept diving down until the other tower went poof, and the curve levels off and gradually started rising. And then when Building 7 went poof, the curve was back to, went almost back to normal. But for the duration between the activity with the Twin Towers and Building 7, there seemed to be this odd drifting of the Earth's magnetic field. Some really curious questions arise there. And how I came upon discovering Hurricane Aaron, I wanted to study the plume coming out of Ground Zero. So I was gathering all the plume pictures I could, and I started looking for satellite images of the plume. And I found the satellite image of this big, huge pinwheel, you know, the hurricane. I went, what? What's this? Didn't know about this. But in also studying the plume images, I came upon noticing that there's two different colors of fumes coming out. The black fumes drift west, the white fumes drift south and up into the upper atmosphere. So I wonder what's going on there. And I compared them also with fumes from, you know, the smoke coming from the California wildfires as well as the Kuwaiti oil fire. And it looks more like the Kuwaiti oil fire, which is like a chemical fire, rather than burning particulate, right, sending up particulate. I also looked at the recent earthquake we had in Indiana. I think it was a 5.4. Their weather pattern abruptly changed right after that. I don't know if it was a natural earthquake that caused the weather pattern to change, or if what caused the earthquake caused the weather pattern to change. But you have the straight bar going from Canada down to the Gulf, drifting from west to east. Then right when the earthquake hits Indiana, it starts turning into the swirl. Like, it looks like a little hurricane right centered over Indiana. Just a curious event. Now, what we do know is when you're making coils, when you wrap a coil wire around a magnet, you can get voltage out of it. If you wrap voltage around an iron beam, you can make it into a magnet. So we can turn electricity into magnetic energy and vice versa. So it's kind of interesting of that interaction. Kind of opens up a whole new set of questions.
And the Hutchinson effect?
Is a variety of different field effects of electrostatic and radio frequency waves intersecting. And the region which they intersect is where the effects happen. So if we get various fields, different type signals interacting under a tornado or hurricane, it appears it's a natural Hutchinson effect.
Mm-hmm.
We get levitation, we get materials blending into another and re-solidifying. You look at where a tornado's gone through and or a hurricane, and sometimes you see nothing but the foundation. Kind of like how Ground Zero looked, you know, the morning after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Not much material there.
Let me tell our listeners, we're going to open the phones now. The number to call is 588-0893 or 202-588-0893, and you can have a conversation with Dr. Judy Wood. Good morning, caller. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It seems to me that if a 747 full of gas hits a building, all bets are off. That's my comment.
Dr. Wood?
All bets are off. Well, a 747 full of fuel might cause some fires. But jet fuel is kerosene, and kerosene doesn't burn all that hot. After all, we have kerosene lanterns, and they don't melt. And if it was a kerosene fire, folks are concerned about, an hour after an airplane would have crashed, we just have fire from what's burning in the building. The jet fuel is already gone. And if you think about 4-inch thick steel columns, you know, box beams with a wall thickness of 4 inches, that's a huge heat sink. How do you get that much heat in that to cause any damage? And if you're thinking it's the heat that's taken the building down, it doesn't cause a building to spontaneously turn into dust. The building would wilt. Like, I give this pop quiz to my students as a fun example. You get a bunch of old metal coat hangers and wad them up to make a grill over a little campfire to cook a pile of water. As the water begins to heat, what happens to the coat hangers? And the multiple choice. One is nothing. The other one is the pot gradually sags to the ground as it heats. Another one is the coat hangers spontaneously shatter into little straight segments and fly in all directions. Another one is the pot, all the coat hangers spontaneously turn to dust and the pot slams to the ground. At that point, the students are usually giggling. You realize the absurdity of that. But that's what we saw on 9/11. The building turned to dust.
Good morning, caller. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood.
Good morning. My question to the doctor is that whether or not a similar effect to the espousement of the theory with the World Trade Center, I guess you would say imploding, would that affect, could that be translated into, I don't know if you study weather patterns, but we did have a super tornado over 1 mile wide that touched down in Colorado, I believe it was this week. These weather patterns caused by global warming, or is this something that is simply a fluke of nature?
I don't know what, you know, is controlled, what isn't controlled, and it's up for question. But there's some pretty anomalous weather we've been getting where it really causes a lot of questions. We know that weather control has been around for 40 years. And there's a treaty that was signed, I think at the UN. I've got a picture of it on my webpage in the appendix of this series, where the U.S. and Russia and so forth were agreeing not to use weather as a weapon. And why would they have been called to sign that?
For crop control and as far as the weather control?
I couldn't hear the first part of your question. Do it again.
Are you speaking of the seeding of clouds? I do remember that as a part of weather control for the promotion of crops. Are you speaking of that? As far as
No, it's weather control all the way around. If you can alter weather patterns globally, imagine if you don't put a stop to that. You could have every crop around the world killed for a whole crop season. What would that do to life around the planet?
Thank you so much.
So our governments, our major governments, have the capacity to control weather or
there's
aspects of weather.
There's a great deal of evidence on this. And, of course, you know, whatever is discovered somehow gets weaponized.
And so so Russia and the United States agreed not to use their power to control weather and put it in a treaty of a kind. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Good morning, caller. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood.
Yes, good morning. I've called your show several times on this topic, and I've actually handed you a DVD at the PFW fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember that.
Yep.
You know, I'm a member of 911truth.org, DC911truth.org. And, you know, I'm kind of speaking for this organization when I say that the directed energy weapons theory is not accepted as being a credible idea. Dr. Wood is not considered to be a credible expert. I've gone to all the websites. I've heard her many times on this show now and gone to the websites and found...
Why is she not credible?
Well, the directed energy weapon information, the microwave, and I assume that she's talking about a microwave weapon that directs microwaves. They have that kind of weapon for crowd control, but it's only for crowd control. It just heats up the skin. And a microwave will heat up water very well, but it will not heat up steel. You know, you put a steel pot in your microwave, it will not heat up. But you put water in there, it will heat up. Those microwave weapons are used by the military for non-lethal technology for crowd control, and it becomes very irritating when they beam these microwaves onto a crowd.
And Dr. Wood, you want to respond to that?
What I consider directed energy weapons is energy that is directed that is used as a weapon. And
well, now you got to name the type of energy. I mean, if you come up with something that you can talk about, you know, we can talk about it scientifically. But you know, as a professional engineer, which I am, I don't find anything on your websites of scientific content. I mean, it's the only thing I read about is microwaves.
I don't believe I have a whole lot on microwaves there. There's just one of the toys out there. If you look at my website, I've got a whole lot of different catalogs of evidence. And I've been slow to jump to any kind of conclusion because I've been methodically and scientifically going through to see what we see in the evidence. And my motto is, experimental evidence is the truth that theory must mimic. And so the most valuable thing we have is the evidence.
Yeah. Well, now, Ambrose, I have a challenge for you. You know, I'm a member of this local organization, and we ascribe to the theory of Dr. Stephen Jones, formerly a professor at Brigham Young University, a physics professor. And this is the we belong to the majority opinion on what in the 9/11 truth movement about what happened. And so I would like to get some of our people on the air, and it can be Greg Jenkins, who's a local physics professor. It can be Matt Sullivan, who heads up DC 9/11. I mean, I could come on myself, but I think you know, if you could give me a phone number that I could call so that we could arrange for, you know, the DC911truth.org movement to get on WPFW, I would be very grateful.
No problem at all. You just call 588.
Yep.
0999.
Yep.
Extension 354.
Okay. And you will respond to me?
Of course.
But now you haven't responded to my emails, so I'm asking for a commitment to respond to my telephone call.
Oh, I'll respond to your telephone call, and if I get your email, I will respond to your email.
Oh, okay. Well, I will call that number, and hopefully we can set something up.
Of course. And what's your last name?
Boyd. It's Greg Boyd.
Okay, I've never gotten an email from you.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Look to hear from you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, caller. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood.
Is this me, Ambrose?
Yeah, it's you.
Well, I'd like to do a little thought experiment here with you because it's very important to keep the focus on the questions instead of fighting over the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And in the center of those buildings, the core columns, which went up 66 and two-thirds of a story, which is an interesting number, and but those columns, there are 16 of the core columns, and there's another 64 around them, but the real deep core ones, they were 100 PSI steel. That is very special steel. Normal steel is 60,000 PSI. These were 100,000. This is really cooked up high-carbon steel, expensive. And it was made, I believe, by a Rockefeller steel mill in communist China in the 70s. But never mind. Those columns were, I believe, there are 27 by 54, but they varied. And they were oriented north, south, and east, west. They were 5 inches thick walls on those columns. And they had a 6-inch interior piece, solid steel, 66 stories high. Now, if you take a screwdriver and prop it upwards on your desk, and then take a piece of paper and slam it down on that piece of paper, on the point of that screwdriver, the paper just goes right through it. And what happened when those floors disintegrated, those huge steel columns, which were buried down in bedrock, those floors would have just collapsed like a piece of paper coming down on a screwdriver. The question is, without getting into all kinds of fights, whether it was microwaves or this frequency or thermite or thermate or all these different fights we can get into about who knows what, the question is, less like the screwdriver remains standing when you drop a piece of paper on it, those steel columns, what happened to those steel columns? If you have a meeting about 911 and your audience leaves thinking it's thermite, and one another thinks it's thermite, another one thinks it's a microwave, another thinks it's a hurricane, but you ask them, well, what's this all about? And they don't know. You failed in your meeting. You have to have them leave to say, what happened to the steel?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can start to have all about how smart you are and all of that. So I just wanted to make that point, to keep us on the point that those were huge steel columns.
Absolutely.
And they disappeared.
And they didn't burn, did they?
Where did they go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to call that in for you.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Good morning, caller. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood. Good morning.
This is Calvin Stedman.
Good.
I'm glad to be talking with you. I have one question in regard to if you have any information or have ever heard of Global 2000.
Global what?
2000.
Global 2000.
Here's my understanding that it's a government program by the Republicans to, as they always do, destabilize other areas. This particular program, from what I understand, is to decrease the world's population by the year 2000, in which, by various means of, you know, destabilization of governments, also, again, affecting the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if I called in once before and asked this question about Global 2000. And one gentleman did have some information and was aware of this particular program. The other thing is, I'm a baby boomer.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1968, Charlton Heston made a movie called Soylent Green. In the movie, there was one line that he used, and it was exactly global warming. This movie was made in 1968,
mm-hmm.
depicting the future of 2022. And he used that particular term, global warming, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it's leading me, but it seems awful strange that someone would come up with that idea at that particular time in the year, for the year 2022. Do you have any thoughts or anything that you can share with that?
Dr. Wood, or...
I don't know about that in particular, but I can see changes that are happening that really concern me. And one thing that I ended the series with at the end of page 8 is something that was meaningful to me. In looking up, you know, how much TNT is equivalent to a seismic signal of, you know, magnitude 2 or 3 or 4... And you go down the scale, you know, we've recently had something of magnitude, I think 7.9, and also the one that, the Sumatra one was around 9, that's getting up pretty high. And if you have a seismic signal of a 12, it's enough to split the Earth in half, which is also, it's 160 trillion tons of TNT at magnitude. But it's also equal to the amount of energy received by the Earth every day. And if you think about what energy we have and how we want to spend it, and I think that's something that, that our culture needs to start thinking about. How do you want to spend this energy? Tearing the world up? Or living this, this, you know, life where everything has life?
Yes. Well, I'm gonna get off my phone so I can listen to your comments.
Thank you so much for your comment. Good morning, caller. You're on. Good morning.
Hey, Ambrose, how you doing?
Good.
Love your show.
Thanks.
Listen, I want to say first, I think you devoted a little too much time to that first individual, considering his credibility was debatable. But what I wanted to say, though, was that as far as the remains of the building are concerned, because that individual called and asked, from what I had read, the girders were cut into 16-foot lengths and sent to China to be melted down, which, I mean, and that's like removing evidence from the scene of a crime.
How about that?
So, that's incredible. But I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, we don't really have any evidence that it was sent to China.
We have evidence to the contrary.
The picture that
was taken before noon on 9/11, it shows this, like, flat football field.
It shows what?
It's like an empty football field. And actually, the folks that were trapped in Stairwell B, when they came out, they crawled out. They said they crawled out onto an empty football field.
Yeah.
You know, where did the buildings go?
Where did all this steel go? We have no evidence except the government's word that they shipped all the steel to China.
Same with the plane at the Pentagon.
Yep.
Take it easy now.
Okay. Good morning, caller. How are you today? You're on.
Hello. Yes, I would like to comment on what this gentleman just said about Dr. Judy Wood and Stephen Jones.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a physicist by training. I studied at Caltech and did work on cold fusion at Portland State. I strongly support what Judy Wood and you, Ambrose Lane, by the way, are doing, as well as John Hutchinson. I think it's quite obvious that there is a disinformation operation going on in order to divert those who are somehow awakened to the fact that the official version of 9/11 is a lie, and keep them away from finding out what possibly happened, which I think is quite close to what Judy Wood is talking about. And so I think that what happened has to do with the use of free energy from the vacuum of space and electron spin, which obviously is the last thing the powers that be want us to know about.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, and I applaud. At first I thought she was going too far, but I think now that there might be something to Judy's, well, more than something, to Judy's connection also of 9/11 and Hurricane Arian, because weather modification is pretty much a secret underworld, a black project reality, I suspect.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for letting me in.
I'm glad you came. Good morning, Carla. How are you today? You're on.
Hello?
You're on.
Oh, yes. Hi. Doug Hong from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Sure. I really appreciate your program and the work of Dr. Judy Wood. I've had a little radio program at Shepherd University, and over the years, I spent a lot of time on this. You can look at it logically, rationally, and physics, you know, you really can't argue the laws of physics. Now, we're getting to esoteric things here. There's lots of subjects we could cover, but one thing I find interesting is the disinformation, the people that call themselves 9/11 truth. There are a lot of people out there, sometimes they say something that is, you know, somewhat truth. But the major point, okay, if you think that two Boeings could leave Boston and fly around for an hour and 20 minutes, we know they're hijacked, and that they're not intercepted, that demands a complete lack of knowledge about air traffic control, about the processes of interception, et cetera. Okay, we have no Boeing wreckage. We obviously have no Boeing wreckage at the Pentagon. You know, I focused on that at first. We have nothing at Shanksville in terms of Boeing wreckage. I think there was a retired Air Force colonel that his job for the military was investigating air crashes. He said that, in his opinion, the site looked like somebody dug a hole, buried a bunch of trash, and blew it up. Now, crash physics is a very important science. Dr. Judy Wood has pointed out, you know, how at the also physics in terms of the aerodynamics, the Boeing could not have accomplished what is supposed to have been done at the Pentagon in terms of the banking turn. It would have been put into a high-speed stall, and it couldn't have flown that closely to the ground. Also, logically, why would you do that if you're going to crash it in? You know, you would just crash it in. And also, there have been pilots who said that if they were tasked with such a job, they couldn't do it, people who actually fly these things. So crash physics, also very important. In New York, at 700 feet, a 757 could only maybe fly at about 200 knots. That is the only, as could not go any faster. The blob, and if you look at these videos, the videos are obviously fake. We have like a black blob flying into the tower and flying through, not finding any resistance, and the black blob coming out at the other end. Okay, so one way to look at this is aerodynamics, that the story is not possible. And then, of course, the 737 engine that was very neatly placed at the Murray Street sign underneath the scaffolding that would have had to not only fly through the tower but another building. And again, you know, we could just go on and on, but I really appreciate Dr. Judy Wood's work, and maybe she could come join us back at Shepherdstown on my program. It'd be really neat.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, Carla. How are you today?
I'm very good, very good. For those of us that aren't scientifically minded and, you know, don't have a sense of the engineering and the physics implications, so it's like, for the sake of what, for us on the ground, this type of conversation about economic resources in the two towers being attacked by energy weapons from the military-industrial complex, I mean, it's like, that's a lot of resources being spent on what? For the sake of what? That's my question more than a comment.
And Dr. Wood, you want to try to respond to that?
Yes, for the sake of what? I'd say it's for the sake of all of the victims that there were on 9/11 and victims for the next event if we don't find out what happened to this event. There's, you know, physics has to make sense. And what I've been doing is looking at the evidence. And if you look at the evidence, just looking at the data, it leads you to the answer. All by itself, you don't have to force it there. It's not speculation. That it's what we see is a new technology that is capable of turning two 110-story buildings to dust in a period of eight or nine seconds. That's pretty amazing. And what we also have that we can see from the evidence is that the problem is continuing. It has not stopped. It is not a self-quenching reaction. Bankers Trust, they're trying to take apart. First they repaired it. Then they started taking it apart. Why would they spend the money repairing it to only take it apart? But they haven't even finished taking it apart after almost 7 years. And it's, you see the brand new beams that they replaced looking like they've just instantly turned to rust. There's other anomalies in the area, and we need to figure out what happened so we can fix it. And we don't want this to be able to go on and happen again. So that's why it matters, you know, how it was done.
Good morning, Carla. You're on with Dr. Judy Wood.
Well, what amazes me is how people sharing a paranoid delusion gather together and support each other. That includes you too, Ambrose. I mean, there is no basis to fact to what this woman is saying. I mean, there is no basis to fact to believe anything she's saying. It's complete science fiction. And it borders on absurdity. But however, this paranoid delusion seems to persist.
What's the fiction?
Oh, that there were no remains of the buildings after they fell?
That's fiction?
Yeah, that's fiction. I was there.
How much steel did you see?
What are you saying?
How much steel did you see?
I saw all the steel in the building, Ambrose.
Well,
And this is what I mean by your paranoid delusion,
that's
Ambrose.
Not, that's not what our government said.
Okay, another thing, Ambrose. Humankind has been bending and melting steel with fire for 2,000 years. That's a fact.
With how much fire?
Ambrose, we developed steel.
With how much fire?
In the Iron Age, Ambrose, we developed steel. We made it. We do it with wood and a rock furnace. You're delusional,
how
man.
How much heat? Oh, he's gone. Dr. Wood, you want to talk about much heat?
As to the heat aspect, let's go back and look at the data. If we look at the evidence of what is at the site, they had fire hoses on the remains. And in the afternoon of 9/11, a water main broke on West Street, and it flooded into what looks like a lake. So how can you have anything very hot that's submerged in water without a steam explosion?
And how much heat does it require to melt that kind of steel?
Melt steel over 2,750 degrees, close to 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit.
And how much heat is produced by the kerosene in those planes?
You can get up to 800 degrees or 900 degrees for a fire, but that's a small amount until it's burned up and gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, how much heat would it take to melt all of the steel in the building? Well, the building would be glowing red hot first, the entire building from top to bottom. You see this big glowing thing. But what really hit me was that even with that dust cloud chasing people down the street, the dust cloud was not hot. Various witnesses said it was cooler than ambient temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And after the dust cloud passed, we saw no burnt bodies.
Yep.
We saw no burnt bodies over the entire scene.
And a whole lot of paper.
Yeah, and the paper didn't burn. Great.
Good morning, Carla. How are you today?
Good morning, Ms. Lane. How are you today?
Good.
This is Michael from Southern Maryland. And okay. How are you, Dr. Wood? How are you today?
Great. Thanks.
First of all, a quick comment. I've got a quick question for you, Dr. Wood, but a quick comment about the caller who questioned and challenged everything you said. That was perfect. That was beautiful. There was an opportunity for an information exchange, and what I'd like to say to the caller is, You took me so far, and I was waiting to hear your answers to what Mr. Lane was saying, perspectives of Dr. Wood. You gave me all that information and name-calling and whatnot, a lot of energy, but you didn't give me any facts. Maybe you can consider that and call again. That's my comment. But really quickly, Dr. Wood, when I was working at Howard University years ago, I was having a conversation with a professor of physics and astronomy, and because of things I've seen in my world, at that point only 40 or so years now, 55 years on this planet, I had a question to ask this gentleman. Are you aware of any theory or science about the fact, what I believe is the fact, that physical laws can change in the universe? And he mentioned Coulomb's law. If I'm not mistaken, and I'm thinking back to a long ago conversation, Doctor, but if I'm not mistaken, Coulomb was a French physicist, is that correct? Would you know?
I think so.
Well, anyway, he mentioned the fact that this gentleman had done some research, and there was something called, I think it was a theory, if I'm not mistaken. Again, I'm not really sure how he framed it, but he said there was something called Coulomb's Law. Now, are you familiar with that at all? The point is, I'm going to do additional research. I just thought of it when I was listening to your conversation. But again, he said he mentioned that law and that physicist in response to my question, which was, well, my statement of what I believe is a fact, that is there something I feel?
There's various different types of physical laws, and
exactly.
There's different ones that happen different ways. And
exactly. And I'm going to let you go. I just want to just throw that out there, okay. Saying I don't understand how many physical laws there are, how many actions respond to what you just said, but I understand what you're saying. And I'm going to do more research, and maybe I'll get back to you on that, and I'll check your website. And I like the dialogue, drawing conclusions. Is something up to me and the individual, but I like the dialogue. And again, to the person who challenged, I think that was one of the best opportunities we had with such an aggressive put down, so to speak, but very few facts.
Mm-hmm. You got
but
it.
You all have a good day, and I'm going to listen. Nice to talk to you again, Mr. Lane.
Take care, always. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Thank you. Good morning to you and your guests. let me start off by saying I do not have a PhD. I do not have a college degree. I served 4 years in the United States Air Force. And on the morning of 9/11, I served also as a fire. And my job field was airfield crash and rescue. I was a fireman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And on the morning of 9/11, I was dumbstruck. I was in awe, and like most Americans, I was in complete shock. And when the buildings collapsed, I had an uneasy feeling in my stomach at the time because all this information is happening at once, and I couldn't put it together. But my gut reaction was something doesn't fit, something is wrong. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the premise that the gentleman that called in and said, "Well, you know, fire's been burning steel. This is all true." But something that people need to know about jet fuel, something I know a little about because we used to practice with jet fuel. We would burn 800 gallons of jet fuel a month on a mock-up of an F-111. I was stationed in England, and that mock-up, this is back in 79, 75, is still standing there. I went back in 81 to visit. It's still standing there. It hasn't melted. Jet fuel burns out pretty fast. When you dump it and you light it, it burns out pretty fast. If left on its own, it'll burn out pretty fast. It almost like it evaporates. When those planes hit the building, and I listened to the eyewitnesses from the fire department, the fire department personnel were saying they had the fires under control.
Mm-hmm.
They said they had it under control. I mean, the interviews were there. And I thought that was kind of odd. And then I started hearing word that they heard explosions and eyewitnesses that said that they heard explosions. Just like when Kennedy was assassinated back in 63, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
they started quieting these eyewitnesses and you didn't hear from them.
Right.
Secondly, you have a crime scene. Regardless as to what you believe or what you think you may know or you don't know, you have a crime scene. All the evidence of that crime scene was destroyed. And I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Good morning, caller.
Hello.
You're on.
Yes, we had a caller couple back that wanted some facts. And I saw a very interesting Discovery Channel documentary-type program on this, the World Trade Center itself, actually. And they made it before the World Trade Center came down, so it wasn't something that was concocted after the fact. The World Trade Center was constructed in a way unlike almost any other building in our nation. The exoskeleton of the building held the weight. There were no internal columns other than the elevator shafts. So it was pretty much, those floors were like almost an acre of open space. And then they had some interior partition walls, but they were not load-bearing. When people call in and say it takes 2,500 or 2,800 to melt steel, I don't have a problem with that number. It is what it is. But what they're missing, and what your guest seems to be missing, and a lot of your callers seem to be missing, is it may take that to turn solid steel to molten steel, but it doesn't take 2,800 pounds to weaken steel so that it will bend. You can start bending steel at about 700 or 800 degrees if you put enough weight and pressure on it. Now, that building was never meant to be hit by such a large plane. They figured it could be hit by a smaller plane and survive. But I would encourage any of your listeners who want to get educated on this matter to go to the Discovery Channel and see if you can find that. And the way that they were built, and what they were built on, is the steel beams sat on like lips or clips, and there were no walls underneath that held the one above. It was all held by the exterior skeleton of that building. Once that skeleton was breached, and once that heat got up to even 900 degrees, it weakened the clips that the beams were sitting on enough that they could bend, and then they just pancaked down. I mean, I have some problems with 9/11, and I don't believe that we're getting 100% of the story, but some of the stories I hear about thermite and people putting small nuclear devices and all this other jibber-jabber, if you want to be led astray, it's very easy to be led astray. But if you want to get facts, they're not hard to find. They're out there. You don't have to melt steel to its molten form before it deforms and loses its ability to hold any weight.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'm afraid this is going to be the last call we're going to be able to take because we're running out of time. Dr. Wood, we're going to give you the last 2 minutes.
Well, in response to that last caller, if all the floors pancake down, where's the stack of pancakes at the bottom? Also, there were the floors were not just supported by the outer edge, they were also supported by the inner core columns, which were massive, like 4 inches thick wall of box beams. But the steel wasn't there. There was no, there, you know, how many restrooms in the building? There's no toilets left. No computers found. There's, you know, you go on and on, and there just was not enough material left. So something very extraordinary had to have happened. And I believe this is a demonstration of a new technology. But what I would love to see is this new technology used to help people rather than hurt them. You know, back to how I ended my last page of this new series on weather, is how would we want to use that energy to split the Earth in half or to go into life over the entire planet? You think about the amount of energy the Earth receives every day and where it goes. You have birds. You have cows. You have humans. You have sunlight. You have waterfalls. Beautiful planet. Let's preserve it.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us once again. And, John, I'm sorry we didn't get to hear from you, but thanks so much for being there. This has been We Ourselves. I'm Ambrose Eileen Sr., and I'll see you again next Friday. Take care now.